Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
From the hills of Strawberry Canyon, I'm Coin Dang, and this is the Golden Bear Cast. Let's go. Go Bears.
And welcome back to another episode of the California Golden Bear Cast, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This is an episode of the 89 Blitz. Myself, Rob, Andy, and of course, if you saw the title, we have probably the guest who's been on our show the most. The best slot corner in the country to this day. I still believe to this day is still the best slot corner in the country, Mr. Travion Beck.
What's up, y'all?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. It's just doing great, living life, you know. Can't really ask for much more.
Yeah. I'm assuming you watched the game unfold on Saturday and all of the other news that transpired coming up to the game.
Yeah, definitely did watch the game. It was a lot going on.
Did you feel like that was Cheez-It Bowl or the Cheese Nips Bowl? So they say. Did you get those vibes? Like, how did you feel? Because like, I know, like,
a, yeah, you watching as a fan, like, how did it feel?
It was quite wild. I don't think I've played well over 100 football games in my whole life, and I don't think there will be anything that ever compares to what the Cheez-It Bowl was. But it was close. That was definitely close.
Yeah. How many times in your career have you seen sideline interference called?
Yeah, not too many. not too many at all. Not even when I was in Pop Warner. It is quite absurd.
That's amazing. That in and of itself just. We were a part of history.
Right, literally. A part of history.
And that's what we were saying when we were watching the game. It was just like, we're not here to win or lose. We're here to just watch Cal history again together. Just as a body, as a congregation, just to feel it in, to know where you were when that happened. But the reason we got Trey on here today is we had him last year. After the whole UCLA switcheroo game thing. But we wanted to go a little bit more in depth with him today about what it's like, you know, at least from my perspective. Andy has some questions of his own to ask Trey. But for myself, it's asking what it's like being in that huddle, not having, you know, the thought of not potentially having your room coach there with you, and some of the procedural things that might go along with that. Because I've never been on a football team, so I don't know what those conversations are like. I guess we can just ask them questions. But Andy, if you don't mind, I'm going to start off. The first thing I want to ask Trey is, like, what goes on in the huddles when you're, like, you know, when the defense is off the field, right? You're usually with you're with your room, you're talking to your coaches, mm-hmm. maybe some of the grad assistants and whatever. Like, what is their role when they're there? I'm assuming it's not just like the NBA timeout of like, come on guys, you got to hustle, play for each other. I'm sure that happens too, but like, there's probably some technical stuff that goes in those conversations too, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, every coach has the, you know, their different type of coaching style. I can only speak on the coach I had at the time, which was obviously Coach GA. So obviously Coach J being intelligent as he was, like, we picked up on a lot of tendencies that, you know, teams would, you know, come up with in their game plan. So, for example, we, you know, halfway through, I think, our 2017 season, we started to realize that, like, teams come into games with scripts. So, and they tend to stick to that script very often. So, most teams, most offenses, at least, they only come in with about 20 or so plays. Mm-hmm. They'll just switch up the formations, but still attack the same areas of the field. So, as our games went on, you know, particularly with the Takers, we'll go to the sideline, we'll tell Coach GA what we see, just for when the second half comes around, we already know what's coming. So I would feel like it would be a huge blow. Like, obviously I'm just talking from, you know, having coached GA. I can't speak on any coaches they have now. I don't know what type of coaching style they have.
Yeah.
But losing Coach GA in the, like, you know, before a game would suck. Like, literally. Cause, you know, it's just like, you need to be coached how you've been coached the whole season. Like, you need, you know, whatever type of style they have. Like, Coach GA was very passive, but also very informal and very helpful. So missing that on the sideline, you know, kind of takes your drive away a little bit. So, yeah, I guess it would be very detrimental to lose your coach before the game. And, yeah, I mean, it kind of, like, you can kind of tell the lack of, you know, that umph, that extra it factor this weekend, it seemed like, from, like, missing coaches. So I think that took a toll on them, as, you know, as we've seen.
So I guess another way I would interpret what you're saying is that, you know, you want some structure, right? You want, yeah, like, especially in an away game, like, you need, this is what you go to. You're not focusing on any of the external stuff. Like, this is what, as soon as you get off the field, you're headed to your seat, you're talking, then you're back on. Like, you need that, like, step by step, and not any of those, like, other factors that might influence it. But if you remove that coach, like, a lot of that structural, like, you know, tunnel vision that you have in an away game is just, it just dissipates.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Yeah. I mean, that's like, I don't have anywhere to pivot from that, because I'm just genuinely curious, like, what goes on in those huddles. Like, we see the cameras, but we don't get the audio, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it's just a lot of talking going on. It's just everybody's trying to communicate. Everybody trying to tell each other, like, what's going on. That's really what's going on the whole time. I mean, obviously, if you messed up, you're probably getting yelled at. But it's just a lot of talking going on. That's really it.
I think so. That's on the coaching side. And then I'm curious on the player side, and what have heard out there is, and we've even heard Wilcox say it, like, this next man up mentality. But you lose 24 players 3 days before a game. What does a lot of, so, okay, I'm going to ask you two things, Trayvon, and I can circle back on them. So, one, I'm just curious, like, the impact that has. And then I'm also curious, a lot of people are pointing to depth and saying that you should have the depth to be able to withstand that type of loss. And I think, like, 24 players, what is that, like, about a quarter to almost a third of, like, your, is that right? Like,
yeah.
Are we in this? Okay. So it's about, like, a quarter of your guys. And curious on those two points, like, first one, you know, what is just going through that and losing that many guys, what does that do to a team? Second one, does any program in the world have the amount of depth to sort of reach those standards?
Maybe just Alabama. That's probably it. There's no other team in the NCAA that has that much depth to where they can lose 24 players and still play the same. I mean, we're talking about, like, college students and college players. Like, 24 players, you can probably go to the third guy on the depth chart. The third guy on the depth chart was probably doing scout team the week before. So they probably have no clue about the game plan, no clue on how – they probably never played before. Like, it's a big jump to go from not playing and third on a depth chart to, oh, shoot, I have to play this week. Like, I actually have to play. Like, because once the season comes out and you see the depth chart, obviously you're still working to move up the depth chart. But, I mean, it's like, okay, I'm still third on the depth chart. And then now 1 week, now I'm starting. So it's just, you have to switch your whole mindset. And it's just like, yeah, you can talk about depth and, you know, next man up, but it's hard to just, you know, switch your mind to just like, oh, I'm here, I'm ready. Like, you were probably just on scout team. Like, you weren't getting no real reps. So, yeah, I just don't think, you know, you can really, you know, blame or ask for depth, because nobody in the country has, you know, that much depth to where you can lose 24 players and still have the same type of performance as your starters.
And when you, Trey, when you talk about scout team, because I remember it when I was with the team, but can you just to take us through like the difference between like what a scout team is doing in practice versus like what starters are doing in seven on sevens and those type of drills?
So most of the time our scout team players, they didn't get really any of the seven on seven or full team during the season, at least. Yeah, they didn't get any of the seven on seven or full team reps. So pretty much on scout team, you're, for example, we'll have our starting defense going against our scout team offense, and then we'll have our scout team defense going against our first team offense. So it's like you don't even know the game plan, really. Like, you don't know what's going on. You don't know what the other team runs. You don't know if they're heavy run, RPO team. You don't know what's going on. So you're just a scout team player. Like, you're just down there basically being a crash dummy for the offense so they can work on their plays.
And so you're not, even as a scout player, are you trying to mimic what the opponent is doing, or not even to that degree? It's kind of like, hey, we need to just do the core minimum, and then we can just work on how, you know, like what we're trying to run that day.
Yeah, you're essentially doing the minimum, because obviously you don't want to hurt your offensive players. So it's like, imagine you're a scout team player, you're going overly hard and you hurt Chase Garbers. Like, you're going to get chewed out. Like, it's just, you're just doing the bare minimum to give them a look.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I feel like, didn't that happen in the NFL? Didn't one of the guys get the starter?
I just can't remember who
it was. Was it in Hard Knocks? I swear, maybe it might have been Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was in Hard Knocks, and I remember it. Coach was so pissed. He's like, what are you doing hitting our starting quarterback? Yep.
That's why they wear the different colored jersey.
Yep. All right, Rob, back to you.
Okay. I mean, to come off of that and then kind of focus in more on this Arizona game, like, from a defensive standpoint, I think most of us agree that the defense played as good as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Like, you shut them out in the first half, and then you gave up the field goal, and you're basically holding them at three until the final, what, say, like 3 minutes, 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you give up that touchdown, which was, I mean, you could say that the touchdown was only given up because of the short field, because they got off the punt return, right? So I think most everyone who's watched the game and is a little bit rational about what they saw is going to say that the defense played really, really well. Like, from your perspective as a former DB and a part of this defense, like, how much has this defense progressed from the beginning of the year till now? Because, like, Andy and I have been preaching that this defense is going to come good when these guys get reps, right? These younger guys that are playing, like the Lews, the Colin Gambles, now the Isaiah Youngs and the Femis and Trey Pastors, like all these guys, right? Just as soon as they get the reps, just like they saw with you guys when you guys first started coming up as the Takers, it wasn't a one season turnaround, or one game turnaround for that matter. Like, how have you seen their progress, and like, are they reaching, like, in your eyes, like, could they get to Takers 2.0? Like, are they getting into that conversation, or not there yet in your opinion?
You hit it with the 2.0 too, yeah, so it's like,
hey man, I'm gonna we all stand on the shoulders of giants.
I'm gonna choose to pass on that question. I feel like they're all really talented, and you know, obviously they have some talented individuals, like for example, Josh, Elijah's making mm-hmm. great plays, mm-hmm. Daniel's making great plays, Josh is locking up in the slot. Then you see the young guys such as Isaiah Young, Chiggy, Lou Dort. Wait, his name is Dort. No, Lou.
Hearns.
My bad. I'm thinking of basketball. Yeah, basketball. Lou Hearns and Colin Gamble. So, I mean, they're getting really good, and I feel like they're going to progress to be really good. Yeah, just like from the start of the season to now, you can obviously see their progression and how they were starting to mature and bond with each other. So, yeah, I like to see that. I mean, they look really good. Like, they show flashes at times.
Yeah, see, he's not gonna touch the Takers 2.0 thing. He's not going there. I love that he's not even entertaining that.
Yeah, not gonna entertain it. I will pass on that question. I think you guys know my answer, but I will pass.
Oh, that's awesome! I love it.
Yeah.
All right, so let me build on that really quick. One last piece in regards to the Arizona game, just. The other piece that's interesting is like the idea of going up against losing all of those guys and then going up against a Pac-12 opponent. Given that I know Arizona is not a good football team, but curious your thoughts. Like, did you have expectations in regards to like what you thought in that Arizona team might be able to do against a team that had lost so many guys, or did the game actually go to the script that you expected?
I actually thought Cal would still blow them out, but after the game, I had to really understand that we were missing our starting quarterback who, you know, has most of our yards, and missed half of our O-line with a backup quarterback who I don't think hasn't played since 2019. Mm-hmm. So at some point you have to become a little realistic and, you know, you can't really, you know, scream at, you know, the offensive coaching staff or Coach Wilcox. I mean, that's a lot for them to take on in one short week. Like, it's just, okay, we've been living and dying by Chase for 3 years. Now we have to go with a backup quarterback and half our O-line gone. So, you know, I just feel like, you know, it's a little unfair that everybody's, you know, upset. Like, I understand that they're upset, but also it's like most of our team was put into COVID protocol and we're missing 24 players against another Pac-12 opponent. Like, the kids on Arizona have had Pac-12 offers. Like, they're good enough. So it's kind of crazy, but yeah, I mean, I just had to be realistic afterwards. I mean, before, obviously I thought Cal would blow them out, but then have to understand that they're missing half their team.
Well, I guess I want to come back to a little bit of the macro question, because I wanted to ask you what it's like being in a locker room. I mean, you're not in this current locker room, but I'm sure maybe the year we lost to UCLA at the very end of the year to not make it to that bowl game, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be the closest feeling to what probably is in like the ethos right now of just underperforming in terms of your expectations, like as a team, like going into the football season, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, this team, I think Andy and I both, like a lot of people, it's like, we're expecting this team. There are lots of loaded, like talented seniors. I think we can get to, you know, 8-9 wins, but it hasn't turned out that way due to the results of the previous games. Mm-hmm. Like in that locker room and in that culture that you've been a part of, like, how do you maintain that? Like, we can win the next one. Like, forget it. You got 24 hours. It's over. Like, we're going to move on to the next thing. And we're going to try to win that out, because I'm just thinking back on your career, and that's probably the only season I can think of that probably had that similar feeling, maybe a little bit of like, we want to get to a bowl game, right? We need to get 6 wins.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, hearing some of your thoughts and experience on that would be great.
It's definitely very difficult. I mean, obviously, when you're riding a hot streak, it's easy to keep progressing, but even just as with regular life, once you start, you know, declining, it's hard to start going back up. Like, it's hard to get that engine back going. So obviously, you know, just that you guys brought it up as an example, we had a whole off season after that UCLA loss to get back on track.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're in the middle of their season, so it's, you know, it comes down to, you know, the strength coaches and Coach Wilcox to really like get them to understand like, hey guys, we're still good, we're still in position, like we still have more football to play. So I mean, it just all comes down to their mental fortitude, really. Like, I mean, they're all young, so I mean, I well, yeah, most of them are young. So I mean, I guess they have, you know, they can see the future, like a brighter future. But I mean, it definitely is difficult. I mean, it took us a while to really buy in after that UCLA game, but you see how we came out the next year. I think we went 3-0. So it's just if you can get the players to buy in. I mean, that comes down to coaching, really.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Love that. Yeah, I think so. One of the things that's really interesting, I feel like we've heard Wilcox talk about before, Trey, is like he said, like, what did he say? He's like, we were in a, well, he had a 3-game losing streak, and he was like, I think we might have gone 3-0 and then went 3-3 or something like that, or even maybe gone to three and four. And he was like, we're in the storm or something like that, I think he said, if I remember. And I was curious, like, just based on this season, if it does feel like this team never loses, all of our Cal teams never lose hope on or sight of where they want to go. Mm-hmm. It's like that. And you've seen, like, let's say, I'm just going to use Oregon as an example. Sorry to any Ducks fans, but like Oregon had a very clear example a couple years ago when I think it was Helfrich was like kind of on his way out. They weren't going to make it to the playoff. A bunch of players came out and were like, yeah, half the locker room isn't like putting in time in the, like, they're not working hard anymore. They were just here to, like, you know, have the lights on them. And once the lights went out, they gave up. So it's like, what is it about this program or in your experience that creates that energy towards finishing strong regardless of the result?
I mean, it's hard to figure out where to attack first with that question. It more so, other than the fact that, you know, football is a team sport, it also comes down to you as an individual, I would say. So obviously in the offseason, we're spending a lot of time as a team, but individually we're trying to get ourselves better to help the team. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like, you know, if you can get, like, back to my point, I guess you can get everybody to buy in to see the future. I mean, I'm not really too sure. I mean, yeah, like they're hitting a real, like, low skid right now, but I mean, what's their record?
3-6.
So we have to win out to make the bowl game?
Yep.
Yeah.
We have USC, Stanford, and
we got the California Cup.
Oh, UCLA. USC, Stanford, so. I don't know. I mean, use that as a good pitch, maybe. Like, we go 3-0 versus the California schools. I don't know. Maybe
first that. Time since, like, 1950
like,
something.
Like, come on. Like, that was always hyping us up. Whenever we played USC, Stanford, or UCLA, especially USC, like, whenever we were on the field versus USC, we were always hyped. So,
I mean, you broke the streak, so you know.
Yeah.
So that's different, too.
Yeah. And why is that? Why is that, Trey? Like, what does USC mean?
Back when I was there, at least, most of us were from SoCal. And it's like, we chose not to go to USC. Like, if you were from Southern California, ultimately your dream was to go to USC. So, like, obviously something had to happen. Maybe you didn't have a USC offer. You know, you seen the way the USC program was going, so you, you know, went elsewhere. But every time we stepped on the field versus USC, we were hyped. Like, that was our most hyped game, especially that time we went into the Coliseum our junior year. That was, as you guys seen, was our most hyped game. Like, we came out ready to play. And that's just, you know, that just goes with, you know, us as individuals coming together as a team.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, we see it, right? Like, all of you guys, when you're here, like, we'll see the off-season videos of you guys doing the footwork drills and all that. And me and Andy looking at those videos, and we're going, we could probably tear all our ligaments in our knees if we tried to do that. Like, just the speed at which they do it. It's just... Someone, this is an anecdote and totally a side conversation, but someone in the comment section on the site today was like, I'm sure like Rob or Leland could have been out there and thrown a better ball and like the offense wouldn't have lost the beat. And I'm like, you're severely overestimating my athletic ability, like by like three stratospheres. Like, I'm sure there's a multiverse somewhere where I became a Pac-12 quarterback, but that's maybe one out of the 450,000 million ones that are out there. Like, it's not happening, folks. Sometimes people lose track of that.
Man, right. They just don't understand how hard it is to play football sometimes.
Yeah, I tried pushing the sled once after practice, like waiting for you guys to come out to the banner. And I was like, how do you do this? Like, how do you, like, physically, how is this possible? Like,
doesn't it go anywhere?
It's like I had to play it off like I actually didn't go 100%. Like, shoved it, and it like hurt me more than anything. I'm like, I just like tapped it, you know. It's like a little shove. I'm like inside, like bruised up all across my arm.
Dude, I remember the tackling drills, or like the D lineman, you know, with the big like weighted pads, and they would hit them over with just one arm. And I went up one time, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna do this. It didn't go anywhere, and my arm hurt so bad, and I was like, forget it, dude. So
yeah,
I think people underestimate how hard it is to play football a lot of times.
Yeah, they do, for real.
All right, well, Rob, you have anything left?
No, that was my list of questions. I got nothing left on the docket.
Trey, this is great. Thank you so much for coming on. It's seriously amazing having you here. Rob's always really good about this. So what do you want to plug? We have a victory cannon. Mm. You can shout out any recommendation.
Anything
that
you want,
you can like, shout out. You want to highlight, go for it. Floor is yours.
We should have probably asked him before.
I've been putting Trey on the spot all night with...
Shout out my boy Cam Beasy. Had the most beautiful pick this week. Oh. For sure. Shout out Cam Beasy. Yeah, that's all I got. Just shout out Cam, because that pick was absolutely beautiful.
It was gorgeous.
Can you take us through that play? Like, and just walk us through, like, what did you see that he did well? And like,
so it was, I actually talked, me, him, and Jayhawk talked about it today. It was cover six, which is cover four to the field, and cover eight. Which is cover four to the, essentially cover one to the boundary and cover four to the field. And Lamar didn't see that Cam did a good job baiting as if he was going to help over the top on Marquise Brown. So he slid to the right to show that he was going to help over the top, but he was really defending the middle of the field. So it was just a really smart play. So once he flashed over the top, he immediately drove back to the middle. Lamar threw a bad ball, it wasn't a bad ball. It looked like a bad ball because Cam made a good play on it. But it was actually a pretty good ball, and he made a nice diving interception.
Athleticism on that pick.
It was absurd. When I seen it, like, I was watching it in real time, I said, oh my God. I didn't know it was Cam at first. Like, I looked, I said, oh my God, that's a great interception. Then I looked, I'm like, oh my God, that's Cam. I mean, man, looks good. Definitely looks good as a safety. Like, oh my God, I thought he was good as a corner, but I mean, the more he learns, like, he definitely shows more and more flashes.
Kind of helps to learn from Patrick Peterson too, I think.
Yeah, and Harrison Smith.
And Harrison Smith, yeah.
Right, so that's great for him.
Yeah, I had the same thing as Trey because I had Lamar Jackson. I have Lamar Jackson on my fantasy team, and I was watching that game. And I was, like, watching that game, and I screamed out, no! And then they showed the replay, and I was like, yes! I could take a minus four. Cam got his first interception. I can take a minus four.
Man, right. We were talking about that all day. Oh, my God. But, yeah, we're just happy for him. Proud of him.
That's awesome. That's awesome that you guys still keep in touch like that and hype each other up and all that. I saw Jayhawk's retweet of you the other day too. I see you guys retweeting each other and quote tweeting each other, and it's so good to see.
We talk to each other all the time, literally in our group chat. So yeah, it's fun. Miss them. Well, I see them quite often actually. So I don't know if I really have enough time to miss them, but yeah.
Well, that's the shout out that Trey wants to throw on there. So, Cam Bynum, if you're listening to this, that was bad man.
Man.
Mama, there goes that man. Woo! What an interception. All right. Well, thanks, Trey. Once again, we appreciate your time. Always willing to come and talk to us about football and giving us the player version of the stuff that goes down. And so, once again, thanks. Hope to have you soon. And we're always looking out to see what you do next. And that's it from the Golden Bearcast. And as always, Go Bears.
Go Bears. Go Bears.